I wonder what you would do if you had the power to dream any dream you wanted to dream. You would start out by fulfilling all your wishes. Love affairs, banquets, wonderful journeys.
Isn't it time you stopped dreaming and sailed with Cunard? The fine line. Visit Cunard.com to discover more.
Soccer is, as we all know, the world's game, and it's played by billions and watched by billions around the world, and everybody thinks that they have a say, and that could be anything as small as, I think they should make this change. Or obviously, the players or the people at the top of clubs make the decisions, but fans do play an important role. And today I'm joined by Matt Jones, who is a writer at World Soccer Talk and the host of the Blue Room podcast. And as usual, Kartik Krishnayar, who, as you all know, is a writer also at World Soccer Talk. And Matt, I want to ask you a quick question. Obviously, you know everything that's going on at Everton, and unfortunately, it's been a rough couple of weeks there, especially following the sacking of Rafael Benitez and everything that's kind of transpired since then. And obviously, in the stands at Goodison Park, everyone's trying to voice their own opinions. And we see signs that say sack the board, change how the club is run. Can you talk about just what's going on at Everton and the reaction of the fans over the last couple of weeks as things have kind of taken a turn for the worse?
Yeah, so what's going on with the fans at the moment? It feels like it's an accumulation of what's happened over the last 6 years under Farhad Moshiri's tenure, really, because when he came in, there was a feeling and a hope that Everton being in a solid position with solid foundations built by David Moyes, that with that extra funding, we could go on and become a force in the Premier League. And Everton have spent around £550 million on players since Farhad Moshiri got involved in the club almost 6 years ago. And they've got worse and worse. It's seemingly every pound spent. So I think people are just getting a little bit frustrated now. I think obviously in the summer, every single person who knows anything about football could have told you that Rafael Benitez was the wrong appointment for this football club and exactly how this was going to end up. Apart from the person that matters at the top of the football club in Farhad Moshiri. And I think over the last few months, certainly, with the team not playing well, there's been a bit of a harder look, I'd say, at the structure of the football club, because we've had a situation there where Marcel Brands, the director of football, was handed a new contract in the summer. But he was sacked in December, seemingly with Farhad Moshiri giving the keys of the castle to Rafael Benitez. Luca Dean was moved on, having fallen out with Rafael Benitez. It seemed as though Benitez had won the argument in that sense. And then 3 days later, after Everton lose against Norwich, Benitez himself is sacked. So I think what's happened at the moment is that all that's left is Farhad Moshiri. There's a few people on the board who are close to him and a big pile of rubble of where a once great football club used to stand. And fans are starting to get fed up with it now. And I think the anger is directed towards the board, what's left of it, because Everton have only got four people on the board at the moment. And it's also directed towards the owner, Farhad Moshiri. And certainly in recent days, this looming spectre of Kirjir Abidjan, who, of course, has been a key figure in the demise of a lot of great football clubs and, you know, has been around a lot of football for a lot of really dodgy dealings that have gone on in the past. He was in the director's box at Goodison Park on Saturday against Aston Villa and is seemingly becoming an increasingly reliable confidant for Farhad Moshiri. So there's a lot of people and a lot of reasons and a lot of layers for all this, but Everton fans aren't happy and they're trying to get the message across in the best way they can, as you saw at the end of the game on Saturday.
Yeah, man, I want to talk to you about Kirjir Abidjan. You just mentioned he was in the director's box. Do you think, as an Everton fan and someone who understands the supporters there, is there any kind of indication that having someone like Kirjir Abidjan could take away from the Everton supporters' voice in the direction of the club going down the road?
I think it's a massive problem, and I think it's something that's been the case for a while. And Farhad Moshiri has relied on Kirjir Abidjan and his advice for a long time now. Now, you go back to when Everton signed Richarlison, I think he was very involved in that deal. And I imagine if Richarlison moves on in the summer, then there'll be, you know, I don't know this for certain, but I imagine there'll be certain stipulations and certain potentials that go the way of that agent. He was heavily involved in the deal that took James Rodriguez to Everton in the summer as well. And he was there, present, when Everton interviewed Rafael Benitez in the summer for the job. And we're talking about somebody here who is not employed by Everton Football Club in any way, shape or form. And yet he seems to have the ear and the backing of the owner, and that's really worrying. And like I said, all you have to do is look back through a large number of the clubs that this fella's been involved in. You know, you think about QPR and the way in which they were run into the ground based on players being recommended by Jurabicin. Arsenal, who signed Willian up to a £300,000 a week, three-year contract at the age of, I think, 32. You know, there's an endless list that I'm not going to go down. And the worrying thing is that Farhad Moshiri seems to have got rid of everybody at the football club who would be willing to tell him no or to stop and think about things. And because there's nobody left, he's relying more and more on this fella. And you see reports linking someone like Vitor Pereira with the job in the last 24 hours. Again, a person who was effectively taken to 1860 Munich on the back of Kjær Jurabicin brokering that deal. So he's becoming an increasingly worrying spectre around Goodison Park. And like I said, I think the protests that are going on and the fan groups that are trying to initiate change at Goodison Park are starting to focus their attention a lot more on him at the moment.
Yeah, Carter, really quickly. Go ahead, Carter.
Jurabicin. At QPR, it was a 5-year rebuild from the damage that he left. Him and Mark Hughes, Sparky, who was very close to him, just an incredible number of irresponsible signings that were made summer of 2012, 2012-2013 season, QPR gets relegated. Jurabicin continues to advise the club even after Hughes is gone, and loads them with even more guys for the next return to the Premier League. And it was talking to people who I speak to in the Rangers community in West London, it was a 5-year rebuild. So let's hope Everton is not looking at that, because QPR got relegated and they effectively have to clear the decks completely of those players. And that took, as I said, 5 years.
Kartik, Kjær Jurabicin also has history at the club. You follow Manchester City. But that was before Manchester City was the dominant side that we all know today. Talking about that and his attempt to get Kaká over to Manchester City, he brought Robinho over as well. Just how can he, you already mentioned QPR, what does he do that makes clubs kind of go downhill and really kind of turn the fans against the club?
Yeah, it all started at Corinthians, actually, in the mid-2000s. And he brought, after that, brought Carlos Tevez and Javier Mascherano from Corinthians to West Ham United. And that created a cycle of events in England. As you mentioned, Tevez ends up at Manchester City. Mark Hughes, who was close to Jurabicin, ends up as the manager. Now his hiring was unrelated to Jurabicin, but then that opened the door for Manchester City to be the repository of all the Jurabicin big money clients, if you want to call them that, because he is now a registered agent. He wasn't at the time, but a lot of these players, he is not their agent of record. So it's a fuzzy situation. And what ended up happening is that Manchester City decided they needed to clear out everybody associated with Jurabicin. So that included Sean Wright Phillips, unfortunately a personal favorite of mine. That included Neda Manua, who we see now on television, really good pundit, and on radio on the Guardian Football Weekly podcast from time to time. And then, of course, Mark Hughes, among others, and Tevez. In QPR, we mentioned what happened. Arsenal, Matt is correct about that. And several other kind of deals on the continent. And Manchester City made a decision as Tevez was being eased out of the club that they were going to rebuild the infrastructure in such a way to attract Pep Guardiola to the club, have a stable foundation, which I guess is easier to do when you've spent as much money as Manchester City had the previous few seasons and had some of these guys come in and out. But what you see now with Manchester City is a very stable club, a club that's gotten its wage bill more under control, and a club that doesn't make that many mistakes in the transfer market, actually doesn't make that many signings anymore. So that's what Everton has to aspire to be. I had thought when Moshiri bought Everton in 2017, I mean, historically were a bigger club than Manchester City or Chelsea, that the takeover would lead by within 5 years to them being in the top four and this massive club in terms of results. And we are now 5 years in and look at where we are. So I was wrong about that one. But that goes back to Moshiri and Ken Wright's mistakes and trusting the wrong people. And there's always been questions about Bill Kenwright's management as great figure as he is on the British stage scene, and as great an Everton fan as he is, there's always been questions about his management of that football club. And now it's been compounded and complicated by all these other factors that Matt mentions.
Matt, looking at the bigger picture, obviously Everton's protests are far from the first instance of fans protesting at games, after games, anything of the sort. But what are the realistic expectations for a club like Everton with these protests? Like, what are these fans trying to accomplish other than just saying, we want change at the club?
I think for the time being, and I can't speak for everybody on this because Everton is such a fractured fan base at the moment, and there are so many different people that seemingly want different things, that you could speak to another Evertonian and they might say something different. But I get the sense at the moment it's just about drawing attention to it, because I think for a while it's sort of been Everton have just drifted in the Premier League and have existed in the Premier League. And people have looked at Everton and sort of said, well, they're not very well run, but they'll always be there. They'll always, you know, just keep being Everton and staying in the, you know, middle of the table, maybe bottom half of the table. But they'll always exist as sort of a presence in this Premier League. And I think it's only recently that people are trying to draw more attention to it. And I think that has definitely helped. You know, over the past few weeks with the team not doing particularly well, there's been a lot more media requests for more fan groups to go on places like the BBC and Sky and BT Sport to sort of speak about this. And it feels like the mainstream sport media over here is starting to wake up to that fact, and the right sorts of questions are being asked by them. So that in itself is a positive thing. But I think what all I want to see personally from Everton is competence at every level. I want to see the owner make competent decisions and competent choices. And by that, I mean appointing people who he trusts, like a director of football, maybe Marcel Brands a few years ago, and then not get involved and not meddle with that person a bit further down the line, causing the rift that ultimately led to Brands leaving. I want to see people on the board make competent decisions. In fairness to Everton, the one thing they've done really well over the past few years under Moshiri's tenure is sort the stadium out. You know, that project is seemingly going very well. There's work undergoing there at the moment, but that's by the by. I want to see them make competent decisions on the manager. I want to see good players come through the door. That's all I want for the time being. I can't sit here at the moment with Everton having taken I think it's 6 points from a possible 42 in the Premier League and say, I want to see Everton challenging for Europe or getting in Europe. That's dreamland at the moment. The club is so badly run and the squad is so far off that. But it's ridiculous to sit here and say that. But they need to get to a level where they're just doing things well. Otherwise, you know, I mentioned that stadium there. We'll have the best stadium in the Championship. We're not going to have the best stadium in the Premier League or one of the, you know, or look forward to all these nights against Liverpool and Manchester City and Manchester United down on that amazing arena on the waterfront. The first game that down there might be Reading at home or Nottingham Forest at home. They need to get their act together. Otherwise, the only way Everton are going at the moment is into the Championship, because you can't keep making this many bad decisions and being this reckless with your spending and not have consequences. We've all seen the way the Premier League's improved over recent years. You know, I was at Goodison Park on Saturday and watched us against Aston Villa. You look at the quality in their squad and they're a bottom half team. You know, the league has got so many good sides in it now that if you stand still, then you're going to get overtaken. And if you regress like Everton have done, you better be looking over your shoulder because you're going to be in serious, serious trouble.
Yeah, and in fact, Everton's slide, Matt, reminds me a lot of what happened to Newcastle in the 2000s, which culminated, and Mike Ashley gets a lot of blame, but he had just bought the club. Freddie Sheppard had actually steered them into this morass where they were overspending. They bought a lot of veteran players, overpaid for guys that had been at big clubs, had been at Chelsea, et cetera. And they ended up being relegated. And the drift Everton is under right now, the last few seasons, reminds me a lot of Newcastle from about 2005 to 2009 when they were ultimately relegated. So that's where you might be headed.
Yeah, and I never thought I'd say this about Everton, but we're the comedy club in the Premier League now. Now, go back 10 years when we had David Moyes and you know, and Bill Kenwright, whatever you said about them, and those two were sort of the ones that were in charge of the ship. Yeah, I wanted to see Everton push on and be a bit more ambitious and challenge for trophies, because I think as a fan, you always want to see your team take that next step. But I always used to look at those sides and think, you know, at least it's not like West Ham, at least it's not like Sunderland, at least it's not like Newcastle, you know. Things could be a whole lot worse. And it's really grim that we've got to this position now where I look at some of the decisions that we've been making. You know, go back to that Luca Dean situation. Everton sell him to Aston Villa. He plays at the weekend against Everton. Has a pretty good game, sets up the goal. The two lads Everton signed with the money that they got from Luca Dean's sale weren't even in the squad. You know, that is the sort of thing that if you're a fan of another club and you look at it, you go, what on earth is going on there? That club is being so badly run. And Everton now are the worst run team in this league. And I don't think that there's any doubt about that. And that's, it just makes me quite sad, to be honest, that's where we've got to. And, you know, I mentioned the stadium earlier, and, you know, we might have 2 or 3 years left at Goodison Park watching Everton. And I've been going there my whole life to watch Everton play. I've had so many amazing moments there. We've spent, you know, time with friends, family there. It's such an important place for so many Evertonians. And it's going to be absolutely horrible when we walk out of there for the last time. But the sad thing for me is that this is the team that we've got for the last few years of this place, and this is the way the club's being run. Now, I look back at Tottenham's last season at White Hart Lane, where they were unbelievable under Pochettino. West Ham's last season at Upton Park, where, you know, they had Dimitri Payet and they had a really good team pushing them forward, and they beat United in that final game, that memorable night. Everton are nowhere near that, and it's just quite grim that we're watching this set of players, this ownership and these managers steer the team through these final days at Goodison Park, and we're going to walk out of there and we're going to say, you know, that those lads weren't fit to wear the shirt for these final, what should have been special years at this great old stadium.
Kartik, I want to bring it back to fan involvement. I think one way that, I mean, this is just a hypothetical, of course, that one of the solutions that Matt could bring up is, you know, bring a fan in, because they're going to have the expectation, then they're going to know what the club expects from its supporter groups. And I think an interesting situation that's happening in the United States is actually over in Portland, where Portland Timbers and Portland Thorns both used to have a weekly meeting with their supporters groups to see, you know, what they want, what changes they might see. But due to certain controversies over there, they've actually stopped those meetings. And obviously the fan groups are up in arms about that. Is there a certain benefit that bringing a fan into talk with executives and those on the board, is there any benefit to that could help the club develop and accomplish the goals of those looking in on the outside?
Well, we know Manchester United recently had a meeting with the supporters trust, and the situation's a little different in England, right? In the US, you have clubs that are effectively, they're called clubs, but they're not clubs in the traditional sense. Portland has a more robust supporters culture than most U.S. clubs, even U.S. lower division clubs. And I'm working on a separate project that actually going to be jumping on to that in just a few minutes, which is related to supporters culture in lower division here in the U.S. And in a lot of those cases, you have these weekly meetings. But what Portland did is pretty rare at the first division level in the United States, where you have effectively an ownership group led by Merrick Paulson that meets with supporters and keeps them on side. Now, the cancellation of that in the wake of all of the controversy around the Thorns and all the controversy over Paul Riley and what's been going on in NWSL is a little alarming, because if anything, we were hoping to see U.S. culture eventually, fan culture eventually evolve to where it is in parts of Europe, parts of South America. When you look at the UK, when you look at England specifically, you've seen supporters have a huge impact at Blackpool. You've seen supporters have a huge impact at Portsmouth in getting these teams sold, getting these teams back on their feet. And in the US, you have a situation where you have ownership more and more, and the people who run, they're not clubs in a traditional sense, but the clubs in the United States moving further and further away from their supporters. And Portland was one example of where it was being done right. And he had an owner in Merrick Paulson who I think was very conscientious of what supporters thought and what the culture was like and public opinion was like among his fan base, his club's fan base on both the men's and women's side. And it's a disturbing development, to say the least.
Matt, I want to wrap up with you just with one quick question. It's just about fans there as a whole. What's next for the fans? Is it just more protests, more things of that nature? Is there other things that are, set up pretty much? Or just what is the next step that these fans are trying to take to get more change?
I think you'll probably see more scenes like we saw at the weekend. I think obviously there was an initiative initially to try and get people to walk out of the stadium against Arsenal on the 27th minute. And that didn't really work. I think a lot of people were were hesitant about walking out on the team effectively when Everton are in dire need of points. So the one at the weekend, I think, was down more to, you know, after the game, do a bit of a sit-in, and it seemed to work a little bit better. The message obviously came across a lot more because you can see all the banners, people are in there. There's a lot more unity in regards to the song. So I think you'll see a lot more of that sort of thing. Like I mentioned, I think a lot of this is now going to be geared towards Kia Jurabichin as well, and his involvement at the football club. I think you'll see banners with his name on at the next few games. So beyond that, I'm not entirely sure. I think there'll be, I imagine there'll be supporters over the next few weeks getting their heads together in regards to what can be done next. But, you know, it feels a bit like a fruitless situation because Farhad Moshiri this week put another £100 million into the club. And now his ownership is totaling 94%. So he is very much, you know, the main person here. Everton did announce this week a sort of fan advisory board that's going to be put in place at the end of the season. Although that is made up from supporters groups that are officially affiliated with the football club. So it's not independent groups, so to say. So I think while some people have seen that as a positive step, some people have said maybe that's a little bit sceptical as well, that these are groups that are tied to the football club. But I think one of the other worrying factors is that it looks as though Everton are going to do away with their AGMs as well going forward. So there will not be a sort of a public forum where shareholders can get together in person and express concerns to the owner and members of the board as well, which I think is a bit of a worry. So it feels like Farhad Moshiri sort of shutting up shop a little bit from that point of view. So I don't know. I think fans are going to continue to try and get the message out there, try and portray how poorly run this football club is and take it step by step. But I can't imagine you're going to be seeing any less scenes like the ones you saw at the weekend at Goodison Park.
Right, and Kartik, just one last question for you as well, just as a continuation of what Matt was talking about. How effective do you think these sort of protests and walkouts and banners can be in the long run, not only for Everton, but just in general?
In general, they're very effective. As I said, Blackpool eventually got the Oyston family out. Pompey eventually found a great owner in Michael Eisner, and the club stabilized. Newcastle, the process took longer. I'm not sure many of us are thrilled with who bought the club, but eventually Mike Ashley felt the need to sell the club. I think in the case of Everton, it's a little different. I think they just want competent leadership. Moshiri has put a lot of investment into the club, turned, as Matt mentioned, some of his investment, more of his investment this past week into equity in the club, taking his ownership share up even higher. So I think Everton wants a competent, stable setup, which in theory should be easier to affect than a sale of a club with fan participation, with supporter protests and supporters making their voices heard. We've seen it work at other clubs. I think ultimately, given the amount of money Moshiri has put in, given how badly things have gone in the process of being advised by Kia Jurabichin, I think at some point he'll pull out of this. But will it happen before the club gets relegated and you open a beautiful new stadium on the waterfront on Merseyside in the championship? That's the big question right now. But I do think in time it'll pay off.
All right, yeah, it should be interesting to see where Everton goes from here. Kartik and Matt, I want to thank you both for coming on. Make sure to check out Kartik at World Soccer Talk and also, as you all know, on the World Soccer Talk podcast. And Matt is also a frequent writer at World Soccer Talk and the host of the Blue Room podcast. So Kartik and Matt, thank you. Hope you guys have a great rest of your day and thanks for coming on.